from WNYC. This is The Sporkful.
Let's start off with a call, as we often do. And don't forget, we are always taking calls at 908-9-SPORK-9. If you have a food innovation, if you have a rant, if you have a debate that needs settling, I want to hear from you. You can drop me a line at thesporkful@gmail.com or give me a call. Once again, the number is 908-9-SPORK-9. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Pat calling from Pittsburgh. Basically, my problem is I have a meatball sandwich here in the fridge, and I want to know the best way to reheat it.
Okay.
When I've tried this in the past, you can't microwave it because the bread gets all sort of gummy and chewy. You can't really put it in the toaster oven because while that will that'll heat up the bread to a nice toasty consistency, the inside of the meatballs are still going to be ice cold from the fridge. Now, I also thought I could take it apart and heat the elements separately, except there's sort of that glue of the provolone cheese, and I think taking it apart will sort of damage the structural integrity of the sandwich, so I'm really stuck here.
This is a great question, Pat, and a pressing issue, I'm sure, for many listeners. Now, describe to me the exact condition of the sub as it is right now. First of all, it's on a sub roll, I assume?
It is.
Is the hinge of the sub roll intact?
I would say it's about 60% intact.
Okay, so we're on thin ice here. And am I correct? If you were to hold the bun in such a way that it sort of is in a V shape, then you have meatballs and sauce sitting in the V, and then the cheese is on top. Is that right?
Right. The cheese completely covers the opening.
So it's been in the fridge for a day or two now. It's cold through. It's rock solid.
It is as cold as it's going to get, yeah.
All right, and how soggy has the bread become from extended exposure to sauce?
I would say the bread is pretty nice. They didn't put a ton of sauce on.
All right, well, you've come to the right place, Pat, because this is an issue I've done a lot of work on. And I want you to try this right now. I'll get you back. I'll bring you back on later in the show to see how
okay.
It went. Take a knife and slice directly down through the middle of the sandwich.
Okay.
Through the cheese, through the meatballs, not all the way through to the very bottom. So do not break the hinge if you can avoid it.
Okay.
You just want to get sort of two-thirds of the way through the meatballs.
Okay.
And do that all the way the full length of the sandwich.
To create sort of a new hinge.
Exactly. A new hinge that will also allow for the meat to be heated faster.
I love it.
All right. Then I want you to gently use your hands to pull apart and open up the meat in the meatball so that heat can get in there very readily and easily.
Mm-hmm.
Then I want you to microwave the whole thing. Basically, you want to microwave it for as short a period of time as you can to just kind of warm the meat a little.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to put it into the oven or the toaster oven. That way, you should only need a couple minutes in the oven to overcome, you know, when you microwave bread, it obviously has a negative effect on the bread. But if you put it in the oven, put it straight on the rack. If, like me, you have a significant other who does not appreciate it when melted cheese oozes all over the bottom of your oven, maybe put a little foil on the rack below the rack that the sub is sitting on. But
okay.
you need to have airflow all around the bread. And that will bring some crisp back to the bread. It will melt the cheese, and the meat will be heated through. And when you take it out, you will just press it back together. And and I think it might not be as good as new, but it's going to be damn good for a leftover meatball sub.
I'm interested to see how this works out.
All right, Pat, try it out, and I'll talk to you at the end of the show.
Sounds good. Thanks.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman, and we're about to challenge your assumptions about consumption and drop a sporkful of knowledge on you. Because we're obsessively compulsive about eating more awesomely, and because if history has taught us anything, it's that the hosts of food shows need a lot of catchphrases. There is a lot of ground to cover here, so let's get right into it. Today's topic for rumination and mastication is muffins. And joining me for this discussion is my friend and colleague, Julia Turner. She's the deputy editor of Slate and one of the hosts of the Slate Culture Gab Fest, which I've had the privilege of producing for the past few months. Hey, Julia.
Hi, Dan.
Thanks so much for coming on The Sporkful today.
I'm so honored to be a full-on Sporkful participant.
Before we get into the substance of the conversation, I want to give you a little quiz.
Okay.
You ready?
Pop quiz. Popover quiz.
Popover quiz, that's right. At least three states have designated an official state muffin. I'm going to name the three states and the three muffins, and I want you to match them.
My goodness. Okay.
Okay. The states are Massachusetts, where you
My home state.
That's right. New York. Where you
live,
now, right?
Shoot, I can't do badly on this quiz.
And then the third state is Minnesota. Do you have any connection to Minnesota?
I've been there.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to name a muffin variety, and you match to one of those three states.
Okay.
Ready? First up, corn muffin.
Massachusetts.
What made you say that?
Well, can I actually, I want to know all the muffins. Can I know all the muffins before I decide?
I don't think you can.
Okay, corn muffin, because Massachusetts has so much seafood. Corn muffins go great with seafood. We like to always serve corn things with our seafood things. Corn muffin.
All right, you are correct. You know your home state well. According to the website of the Secretary of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the school children of Massachusetts petitioned for the corn muffin, a staple of New England cooking, and the legislature made it official on May 27th, 1986.
Oh my goodness.
Were you one of those school children?
Not that I recall. I don't think I had an active role in the corn muffin petition of 1986, but I could have.
Yeah.
I should have.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised. I thought it was a pretty good chance. All right, next muffin, blueberry. The remaining states are Minnesota and New York.
Minnesota has cranberry bogs, or maybe that's Wisconsin. I guess I'm going to go Minnesota.
That is correct.
Wow, I'm like a muffin savant.
Yeah, I know.
I officially win all arguments we're about to have about muffins on the basis of my performance on this quiz.
I don't know about that. I don't know if I can give you that. But, you know, I designed this quiz by structuring it as a matching game. I was wagering that you would get one of the first two wrong, because now you'll get you automatically get the third one
right
also.
Unless I make some woeful error.
Yes. But in Minnesota, the blueberry muffin designation came at the request of a third grade class from South Terrace Elementary in Carlton, Minnesota. And they were inspired by the Massachusetts kids.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. The Minnesota kids chose blueberry because wheat is an important crop in southern Minnesota and wild blueberries are common in northern Minnesota. And apple for New York, Big Apple.
Right. Although, I gotta say, apple muffins are totally gross and among my least favorite muffins.
I tend to agree, and that makes for a great segue into, and we're not going to get into every possible flavor of muffin that exists, but I do want to run briefly through some of the flavors. I would start the discussion by saying that I think there is sort of a holy trinity of muffin flavors. Or maybe I should call it the primary colors. I feel like all other muffins are based off one of these three.
Okay.
Blueberry, corn, and bran.
Okay.
I feel like you either have your fruit muffins, you have your oat, bran, oaty, hippie-type stuff muffins.
Right.
And you have corn is kind of, I guess, in the kind of cake realm. I guess the chocolatey ones might not fit into those three, but what do you think of that?
I mean, it seems like the distinction there is the strata within which the muffin particles are suspended. So you've got sort of a white, cakey, sweet thing with the berry muffins typically. You've got corn, which, you know, like I like a corn blueberry muffin sometimes. I basically like almost anything better if it's corn, probably because of my home state of Massachusetts. And then bran, you know, can be just your better basic raisin bran, or it can be one of those weird Morning Glory muffins that has like carrots and quinoa and all kinds of banana stuff in it.
And do you have a preference there?
I mean, I like corn bread more than a corn muffin. In the muffin realm, I'm a fruit muffin partisan. I like a bran muffin from time to time as well. Which is your favorite of the three muffin flavors?
You know, it kind of depends on my mood, but I judge a muffin largely by, and we'll get to this more in a moment, by the top, how much of a ledge is there and how much crisp is there on the top. I want some kind of something that's going to give me a little bit of a shell.
This is also just to get, I don't mean to malign the apple as a muffin filling and just leave that there, because I'm sure apple partisans out there will be saddened. But I feel like the apple as a fruit is better in pastries. Give it to me in a tart, give it to me in a pie. But the contrast between a mushy apple and a pastry crust is what I want from the apple. When you put chunks of apple in any kind of cake, whether it's apple cake, an apple muffin, the sort of way in which the apple melts and merges into the cake doesn't do it for me. I want a more discreet boundary between the fruit part of the muffin and the muffin part of the muffin. And so that was all I meant as I maligned apple.
Now, one of the issues that I'm very concerned about in muffindom, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Julia, is what I will call the cakeification of the muffin community. And I think this is a very serious issue. You know, it's similar to a concern I've expressed about bagels, which I think have largely drifted in the direction of rolls with holes in the middle of them. You know, Julia, I Googled around for some muffin recipes just to try to prove my point. These are some of the types of muffins that I found. Apple crumble, pumpkin chocolate chip, raspberry cheesecake, honey rhubarb. These are not muffins.
Those are cakes and pies and other sweets.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. I agree.
Those are cakes and pies and other sweets in a different shape.
Totally. I think most of the muffins for sale in most of the bakery purveyors today are A, disgusting, B, too huge, C, too sweet. And I would also make the case that ideally a muffin is something that you make at home and then it gets gobbled up by your breakfast guests and it doesn't actually keep that well. I think there is an ephemerality to the perfect muffin, and that part of what we're seeing with the cakeification of muffins in muffin stores around the world is that, you know, people are trying to make something that's a little more shelf stable. It's not going to go stale so soon. So they want something that has a little more structure to it, a little more oil in it. They're trying to, you know, keep it, preserve it, and sell it to you. And I just think that's not actually what the muffin is meant for. The muffin is meant to be eaten hot out of the oven at your home in the morning.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I wouldn't go quite so far as you would. I mean, I think there is room for the muffin in the bakery. But I think the larger question that I want to pose to you is, let's look at the spectrum of sweet baked goods that I will say runs from scones. A scone is like the driest, least sweet baked good I can think of. Then right. On the opposite end of the spectrum is the most decadent cake. Where on that spectrum should muffins fall?
I mean, I think it's more toward the scone. Not so much in terms of dryness. Like, I think my favorite muffins to make at home are blueberry muffins. I make them with the Cook's Illustrated America's New Best Recipes cookbook. And their recipe has, I think, yogurt in it. So it's a very moist little nub of a muffin, which is part of why you can't keep it for too long. It gets kind of gooey and soggy after a day. But it's not too sweet because it's got that yogurt tang in it, and it's delicious. And also they recommend, speaking of toppings of the muffin, that after you finish the muffin, you dunk it in melted butter and then you dunk it in cinnamon sugar. So it does have a nice sugary crust on top. So that's not taking it away from sweetness in terms of the platonic muffin. But the base strata in which the blueberries are suspended has a yogurty tang and is not itself that sweet.
Give me a number. If the scone is 0 and decadent cake is 100, where do you want your muffin?
36.8.
Okay.
How about you?
I'm going to be about in the same area as you. I agree that it should be below 50.
Right.
Because especially muffins are very much a morning baked good. And morning baked goods should not be too sweet.
Right. You know, I'd always rather have a croissant than a pain au chocolat.
Yes. So I'll put my number at 40.
Okay. So a little sweeter. Why are you bumping the sweetness factor?
Well, you know what? Actually, I'm going to revise that, because now I'm thinking back to 0 being the scone. And I like a scone. I actually think a scone is a perfectly nice level of sweetness for me. It's really just that it's so dry. I mean, you need a beverage with a scone. But I'm stalling. I need to go ahead and commit. I'm going to split the question, though, as you can now choose to do if you want to revise your answer. But I will say, in terms of moisture, I want a muffin at 30. In terms of sweetness, I want it at 20.
Interesting.
So call it 25.
Okay. I think I've averaged the two in my score. I don't mind a little sweetness. I just don't want it to be fluffy like cake. I want it to have some density, some good fruit in it, an interesting texture, but not just be an undifferentiated cloud of sweet crumbs.
Let's talk about muffin tops.
Let's.
Both as part of the muffin whole and what we've seen, this new trend, relatively new trend still, of the muffin top sold without the muffin bottom. What's your take on these, both of these?
Abominations.
Really?
I'm in a dissent from the common Seinfeld opinion about muffin tops. There was the classic Seinfeld episode. I agree that if you buy one of those muffins that has sort of a round base and almost a square top, because so much of the muffin batter has been put into the muffin tin that it's sort of spread all over the top of the muffin tin, and you almost can see the cut marks where they've had to cut the square muffin tops apart from one another. If you buy one of those muffins, there is a satisfying texture to the muffin top, which has the nice crust, it has the nice sheen of the oven. It's not the part that was submerged down underneath in the muffin tin. On the other hand, I basically don't think that muffin tops should be that big. I like a smaller muffin that's just kind of like a little field hockey ball that's rounded and golden on the top, but doesn't have that ledge that sticks out. I think that's the right size for a muffin. Also, a muffin can be a little bit sweeter if it's not so freaking huge, right? Like if you have a nice little compact muffin, that's a tasty bite. And if it's sweet and you're eating, you know, 1 ounce of food instead of five, you can handle that with your coffee or your tea in the morning. So I don't really see the point of separating the muffin top from the muffin bottom. I'm more for eradicating and eliminating the size of muffin tops and presenting a coherent muffin that is one globule of deliciousness with a slightly more crusty top.
Wow. I'm not sure where to begin responding to that. Do you not agree that the muffin top is better than the muffin bottom?
No, I like the whole thing together. I like the way they complement each other, the sponginess of the underneath with the crispiness of the top. I wouldn't want to just eat the top. That would be so thin and pallid.
Let's say you were to make a large muffin that was the type of muffin you would describe as much too large and having much too large of a top. Then you sliced off the bottom. If that top were large enough, it would have the interior texture that you say you crave, while also having more crispiness and texture, varied textures of the outside. I mean, it would have everything.
Maybe it's just my Puritan upbringing in Massachusetts, but the sheer waste of it seems frustrating. And I kind of like the little spongy roundness and the definition of the shape of the muffin bottom. Like, it's such a pleasing little round blob. And I think you get a consistency down there at the bottom of the muffin that's different than what you find in the center of the muffin top.
That could be. I'm just not as big a fan of the sponginess, but I Sporkful listeners know that I have long been a defender of crisp and texture in all its forms. I'm also disturbed to hear that you say you don't like the ledge.
No, I think the ideal muffin doesn't even overshoot its muffin tin. It just comes to a nice golden dome.
Why? But the best bite of the muffin is to when you take the ledge and you put your thumb beneath the ledge and then a forefinger on the top of the muffin and you bend it backward and up and you get a piece of ledge crust that is crispy, that is doughy in the inside, that is sweet, but that is also maybe a tiny bit charred. That's your money bite. That's the muffin money bite.
That's the bite I associate with eating a muffin from like Au Bon Pain when I'm at the train station. And I just associate that experience with subpar muffins. I mean, the Au Bon Pain raisin bran muffin has gotten me through many a hard place. And I've had that exact bite where you pick off that corner and you eat that. And it is the best bite of that particular muffin. But I would just rather have a better muffin that's smaller and all of it is good as opposed to the bottom cylinder being kind of a waste.
I think that you are conflating two muffins here, Julia. I think that you have a valid concern about muffins getting too big. We agree on that. One of the things that you associate with muffins that are too big is this big ledge.
Okay.
So because you don't like muffins being too big, you don't like the ledge. But it is possible to make a small muffin that is a reasonable size that still has the ledge.
I mean, how though? Muffin tins are basically all the same size.
Couldn't you just take a mini muffin tin and just fill those so you get lots of ledge on miniature muffins?
Maybe I'll try that the next time I make muffins. All right, I will experiment. I will stipulate that is a plausible theory, and I will experiment. But it is interesting because there is that fancy muffin trend nowadays where sometimes you'll go to like a haute bakery and they'll serve a muffin that's very cylindrical that almost has – it's another kind of ledgeless muffin, and I'm not that big a fan of it. It has sort of the high paper fence around it.
Oh, yeah.
And then often those have kind of like a crumb topping or some kind of situation on top that seems like it might fall out if once you rip off the high – paper muffin cup fence.
Right. So people understand if they haven't seen it, the muffin cup basically extends, let's say, roughly an inch above where it's touching the muffin. So it's almost like when a dog or cat gets surgery and they put the cone around its neck.
Yes.
It's kind of like that on a muffin.
It's like a health and safety cone for the muffin. Yeah. Exactly. And those muffins do not have a ledge and they're not that good, I think, because in that case, the muffin cone of safety is being used to enable a too big muffin to go ledgeless. So, all right, you're bringing me around. I could see that I shouldn't throw out the crispy muffin ledge with the muffin bathwater.
All right, Julia, let's assume for the sake of conversation that you have your ideal muffin. What type of muffin cup, if any, would you like your muffin to be served in?
Well, for home use, I just butter and flour the tin. I don't use muffin cups at all. They tip out perfectly nicely. So I my favorite muffins, not to be a muffin chauvinist here, but I like my own muffins. My favorites come in no paper. However, I will stipulate there is something incredibly satisfying about pulling those crimped muffin cups off the bottom of either a muffin or a cupcake, whatever you're using, whatever you're baking in them. Because the way that they kind of fold out as you pull the accordion folding off of the base of the muffin, leaving the naked muffin perfectly intact underneath it, separating out from the ledge, if there is a ledge in this muffin, it's a very satisfying experience. Whereas those tall muffin cones of doom, I find very hard to unwrap. They're kind of sticky. You have to rip them. They're a little bit waxy. So I can appreciate the tactile pleasures of the muffin cup.
I'm torn on this one because I totally agree. I think that the experience of pulling that muffin cup off, the way it kind of pops, each little ridge pops, and you can really feel the pop, and it is very satisfying. But I feel like once I remove the paper cup, I look at it and I see muffin residue, and I always want to get that muffin residue off. And I try to scrape it with a spoon, but it's kind of too little to scrape off. But like you always, I just feel like I'm leaving muffin behind.
Yeah, and then you sort of get, once you scrape it with a spoon, it gets kind of like a soggy, mashed up Play-Doh texture. That's not what you want. Maybe this is why you so malign the muffin bottom, though, because if you're eating a muffin that's not in a muffin cup at all, the bottom has a little bit of a crispiness to its exterior in a way that it doesn't when it's cooked in a muffin cup.
Interesting.
Perhaps we can meet in the middle.
That's right. I think someone's going to have to invite me over for muffins. I think that that's an interesting point. I think that you're right. If the bottom of the muffin had a little bit more going in the texture department, I would probably be a little more excited about it.
Yeah, if you cook a muffin naked, it gets a little crusty and chewy down there as well as on top. So the distinction between the top and the bottom is not quite as pronounced.
You said you put butter and flour in the wells?
Yes.
Speaking of butter, let's move on to talk about the ways that we like to eat muffins. Now, I think one of the best ways is toasted or even better, grilled, like on a griddle or in a nonstick pan with butter. Are you on board with that?
Yes. In fact, one of my favorite things to order if you ever go to a diner is to get them to grill whatever muffin they have for you there. And this is an exception to my objection to the cakeification of muffins, because probably if you're in a diner that has a griddle and is worth its dinerly salt such that you're there, it does not have delicious, fancily baked muffins. It has like a gigantic piece of cake. There's a terrific diner down the street from my house that serves a griddled blueberry muffin. This blueberry muffin is the size of a softball.
Not a field hockey ball?
Not a field hockey ball. A softball or a grapefruit. It is a gigantic fluffy piece of sponge cake. It is ostensibly blueberry, but I think what it has is like little dots of blue food coloring sprinkled throughout it and some kind of artificial blueberry flavoring also sprinkled throughout it, but not associated in particular with the dots. But when they slice it in half and put it on their grill, and it's, you know, the same grill that has all the bacon grease and the home fries and the pancakes and everything else, you get back this muffin that has like an incredibly crispy edge and is so delicious to eat. I can't reproduce this experience at home. I think you need a real industrial griddle. Are you able to do this in your home?
I've done pretty well. I mean, I don't know that I've gotten it quite as well as the optimal diner or greasy spoon griddled muffin, but I mean, I think you eat a nonstick pan and butter, and you got to use a lot of butter. I mean, that's the first thing. Do not skimp on the butter. And you can't.
You put the butter on the muffin or the pan?
I put it on the pan.
Oh, interesting.
I put the butter into the pan, let it melt, and then I push the muffin down onto the butter and move it around to really almost like you're soaking up the butter with the muffin.
Interesting.
Then you let it sit on a medium heat for a while.
Okay, that's a good method. I had been spreading the butter on the halved muffin and then just putting it down in a hot pan more the way I do grilled cheese.
Right.
And maybe that was an error.
Yeah, no, I would guess that what happens there is that you end up unwittingly using less butter.
Not something I'm typically accused of, but it could be true.
The other thing that I like to do, especially if you have a muffin of this size, because I think we can agree that the griddled, buttered, grilled, crispy, golden brown face of the sliced muffin is a glorious thing. Don't just cut the muffin in half. Slice it in thirds. So that way you have more surface area, more muffin face exposed. So you end up with two ends and then a middle piece, which can be buttered and grilled on two sides.
Holy moly. This is mind-blowing. I've never seen this. This sounds really delicious.
Yeah. Well, here's what we're going to do. You're going to have me over to your house to eat muffins that you make according to the compromise style muffin we've worked out here today. And I will butter and grow them for you.
This sounds like a deal.
Okay.
This sounds like a delicious breakfast. One last question about muffin slicing. Griddled muffins I've often seen are sliced horizontally. However, when I will sometimes butter a normal muffin and I slice those vertically and butter them vertically. Do you have a notion for directional muffin slicing?
I think you got to slice vertically.
Yeah, when griddling.
Yes, especially when griddling. I mean, it's unfair. This, again, shows my bias, and perhaps the muffins you describe will win me over. But I feel like it's unfair to leave some slices without any muffin top. So this way you get some muffin top in each slice. So I would recommend you slice it in thirds vertically.
All right. This is a whole new world of muffindom.
All right. Well, Julia Turner, deputy editor of Slate and one of the co-hosts of the Slate Culture Gab Fest. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dan.
Hello?
Hey, Pat, it's Dan.
Hey, how's it going?
Did you have a chance to heat up that sub?
I did.
And how did it come out?
Well, let me tell you, I was a little nervous. It took over a minute to heat in the microwave, and by the time I got it out, the bread was definitely that soggy, rubbery texture that I feared so much. But I put it in the toaster oven as per your instructions, and when I got it out, it was an excellent meatball sandwich.
Were you able to revive the bread to at least a good extent? It was a little crispy on the outside.
It was as good as new.
Wow.
It was perfect.
Well, Pat, I'm glad to hear it. Another satisfied Sporkful customer.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Pat. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Well, my thanks to Julia Turner. I always knew that she would be such an awesome Sporkful guest. She's totally an eater. She totally gets it, and she did not disappoint. Again, a quick reminder, subscribe to the Sporkful in iTunes or the RSS reader of your choice. Leave a positive review in iTunes if you're so inclined. Vote up the good ones. Vote down the bad ones. All right, people, let's get that done. And while you're hanging out on the internets, go to Sporkful.com. Connect with the show, Facebook, Twitter, blog, videos. Lots of fun for you to have at Sporkful.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.